You know what? I might have thrown that flag too, because it's a split second thing, and these guys have such a hard job, and they're gonna get scrutinized either way. You're either gonna get it from Michael Faulds from Laurier for not calling it, or you're gonna get it from JP Sertelli for calling it. So it's just that just that's just football, man.
Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics after a short little break to bring you episode 9 of the Exit Meeting series, where we're talking Win City. That is, of course, the Windsor Lancers. And we have a very special guest joining us today. So, Tom, let me throw it to you. How the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. We have a very special guest with us. Former Essex Raven, former London Beefeater, former AKO Fratman, and now we like to throw this term around a lot, the voice of. This is the genuine singular voice of the Windsor Lancers football team. Mr. Brett Hedges is with us on the program. How are you today, sir?
How the heck are you guys doing, my friends? Thanks for having me on the show, guys. This is a great platform, and I'm really looking forward to chatting with you guys. I've been listening to you for a while. We've obviously been interacting a little bit, and it's a great little thing, and I'm really excited to talk Windsor Lancers football.
As are we. But, you know, when we have guests on and you know, when it relates to the program, we know we're going to get to the 12 that take the field and everyone else that partakes in the program to make Windsor football so special. And obviously with you being from the region, you know so well, in addition to the time you spent as a broadcaster, how special this team is right now. But We got to talk about you a little bit right now. And Tom alluded to it. Love tuning into Windsor Lancer games, not just because the product is so good, but you do a heck of a job in the booth. But it's the solo job that you do that makes it that much more impressive, where it's you, the game, and just filling time. And frankly, you do a great job. It's one of those things that I think doing some broadcasting, I appreciate, where you'll let it breathe a little bit, where people always say, oh, dead air. But it's like, you know when to fill it, you know when to leave the dead air. What's that experience been like for you doing the one man booth, the game to call, the color commentating to fill into the void as well? Cause that must be a heck of endeavor.
Yeah, it's something that I've definitely gotten more and more comfortable with. It's my experience doing basketball with the Windsor Express and then the Windsor Lancers program by myself. Sometimes you don't have a color person. That's where I really got comfortable doing things by myself. And just like you said, like letting things breathe when they need to. You don't need to talk the entire time. You just got to try and tell the story as best you can. Like the best way I try to say it is, like, I'm a storyteller. I'm going to try and tell the story as best I can. And there are a lot of things that don't need to be put into the story in order to make it a palatable watch. So football, when I first started with football, I always had a color commentator with me, whether it was on the local cable system with Coach Go, Your TV, or going into OUA.TV. We had a color commentator. Craig Poole was his name. I worked with him. And just when we went to back to when I went to go being on the stream, his work schedule changed, his family situation changed, so he wasn't able to come in and be the color commentator. And instead of me kind of scrambling to try and find someone or asking the program, hey, who can you come be a color commentator, I just said, you know what, I'm just gonna do it by myself. I'm comfortable doing basketball now. It's just time to do football. So it took a couple of years to kind of learn the flow of how I was gonna call games and do these things, but I think that I've really kind of hit my stride the past 2 years, and I really try and make the game entertaining and try and tell the story at the same time.
Well, it's so nice listening to somebody who has such a passion for the team that they're covering, and obviously you do your research into this, because while it is important to be able to let the game breathe, there is a lot of time in between those plays that you got to fill, and every single play there's a little bit of time in there, and you do a great job commenting on certain things, whether that's your relationship with the team or just the vibe in general, stats and whatever the case. With your connection to the Windsor Lancers here, what's that relationship like between yourself and the team? Has JP Sercelli really just reached out to everybody in the community there? It really seems like Windsor football, especially in some of these bigger games at home, you're getting solid crowds out.
Yeah, absolutely. So it all goes back to when JP first came to the program. I first started covering the program when I was in journalism school at St. Clair College in downtown Windsor. The first articles I ever wrote were about the Lancers football program. Joe DeMore was really gracious with his time and giving me access to the program and talking to the team and things like that. I had some friends who were playing at the time, Evan Pershawnak and Nathaniel O'Halloran, guys that I'd played with before. Like I played with Austin Kennedy with the Essex Ravens, so I had that kind of that in there. And so I just kind of, as a journalist, you try and become part of the fabric a little bit, but you don't want to become the story. So you just kind of stay on the outside and kind of be respectful of people's time. When Joe's time came to an end at the U, it became pretty quick that Gianpaolo Struselli was going to be the head coach. And I covered his opening press conference for the local cable system, Your TV, and we did an entire half hour show just about his press conference. And I had a nice, 10, 15 minute interview with him just so we could run the entire show basically as a 30 minute show, just introducing him to the community. I interviewed his brother Joe as well. It was a nice welcome. And even at the time he talked about, okay, we're going to build something here. It's going to take some time, but we're going to build it. We're going to build it through these levels of discipline that they have, or the tenants, or I forget what the exact term is, but he's got his philosophy in check there. And you could see it from his opening press conference that he commands the room. He's a great coach. I had actually interviewed him before when he was coaching with the London Mustangs, London Junior Mustangs, because doing sideline for the Essex Ravens and things like that, sometimes you'd get halftime interviews with those coaches. And I'd interviewed him before, and I was like, okay, when I learned he was coming in, I was like, I think this is going to be a fantastic thing for the program. And even people who were around the program, like Glenn Mills and Joe DeMore, even they said, they're like, this guy is going to do great things. And it was just his time. Like we could talk all day about his resume. It was his time to take over a team. He had worked at Concordia. He'd worked at Western for a long time. He had worked at CCH in London, and all those programs had a lot of success. And a lot of that starts with his dad, right? And the entire family contributing to that. But when he took over and I did those interviews, I was like, I was kind of blown away, because we had had some tough years, right? And to come in with the confidence that he had was really cool. It was something that I took forward to, looked forward to. And his first game as a head coach, I believe that was 2019, they played York. And of course, that's a program that has struggled over the years, and they beat York pretty handily, which was awesome, right? It was good that, get a win in your first game with the program. But they lost the last next seven games of the year. But they were much more competitive than they had been in the past. So it was something to look forward to. Then the next year was the COVID year. They went to the East-West division. So they ended up 2-4 the next year. And that was with quarterback Sam Girard, who I actually coached at Amherst. I was one of his assistant coaches there. So I knew what kind of what he could do with the program and how well they could do. Unfortunately, they just didn't really, like, the gel didn't really happen with Sam at the QB spot. And then the next year after Sam graduated, that's when we had those three quarterback system last year with Josh Shim, Carter Zinger, and Danny Skelton. And Danny ultimately won the job at the end of the year last year. And so you could see from the past, from 3-4 years ago, it's been building. It's all about recruiting and picking up cornerstones of the program and picking up better players at different positions in different years to make your team a lot better. And when I got back into the program after the COVID break, I had secured the job as the OUA stream guy. And I went to go talk to him with the sports information director at the university, just to introduce myself and do, the introduction stuff. Hey, I'm going to be covering the team. This is kind of what I do. I'm going to do the best job that I can. And I asked him, I was like, what's it been like the past couple of years running a program during a pandemic? And he just, in JP Cercelli fashion, was like, it was hard. So, and I was like, I completely understand that. And you could see, like, they were chomping at the bit to get back at at the games then. So it was, it's been a lot of fun. Last year you saw them take some big strides by going 4-4. First year he was with the program 1-7, second year 2-6, third year 4-4. And they had some really tight games against Ottawa to kick off the game two seasons ago. They lost on a walk-off by Campbell Fair, which seems like death taxes and Campbell Fair hitting walk-off kicks is just what happens now in the OUA. But so, yeah, they played some really good games. The games that they lost that year were to Ottawa, Carleton, Western, and Laurier. You can't really be upset about that. Those are some of the premier programs in the league. So the steps that they took this past year to get to 6-2, to only lose to Western and Laurier, it's been a lot of fun to see. Speaking about the game when they played Queens and they beat Queens, that was the first time that they had beaten Queens straight up since like the 90s, but they had a forfeit win, unfortunately, due to an ineligible player, I believe in 2006 or 2007. So like just the steps that the program has taken it's been absolutely incredible to be a part of. And this past year was probably the most fun I've ever had covering a football team and being part of the broadcast. So I don't know if that was part of the original question, but that's where I went with it.
No, it is that was brilliant. It's so much insights into obviously the role that Coach Cercelli, the Don, has played there and the progress that the team has made, even including the COVID missed year and then the truncated season. And of course you bring up the 22 season, which I thought was so informative for us, where it this year, obviously, the 6-2 was when they were really playing ball. They've had now 2 years of really competitive games against Western going back to that 22 season and that 20, but in 22 where they go 4-4, and it's like, okay, they're putting themselves on the map now. This is like really they're establishing themselves as one of those top echelon teams. They're competing for home field advantages. They're challenging the top dogs. But, you know, going to that 22 season, you mentioned the battles with Ottawa, because of course it included that playoff game that
that was their best game that season,
without a doubt. That was miraculous. It was so good that when the other quarterfinal game finished up and everyone just went over to the Windsor Ottawa stream, the darn thing crashed. I mean, yep. Maybe we will save our conversation about OUA TV for another time or off mic, but that season also not only included that trip to Ottawa, and it ends in an incredible game, and the finale and the comeback and all those things, but you mentioned the Carleton game. And mm-hmm. I want to kind of tie this back into talking about Windsor football, because this was something that, you know, Tom and I recently spoke with Coach Corey Grant out in Carleton, and we brought up that piece on, you know, there's when you're out in Windsor or you're out in Ottawa, there's a lot of tough travel you have to do. But when you're going cross province, like that is maddening. And so I kind of want to throw, or it must be. And so I kind of want to throw that piece of it out to you, but just also bringing it back to the Essex, Windsor area football. Cause we were kind of talking before the pod, you know, Tom's from the Golden Horseshoe, I'm from Toronto, and saying how like growing up, you know, I didn't really know what Essex was. I didn't like the Essex Ravens were just this mythical kind of creature of a OVFL team that would just dominate the Western Conference of the OVFL, the old Ontario Varsity Football League before the OFC, OPFL, and now the OSFL. And how it always seemed like this odd thing, though, where the talent at the high school and summer football level wasn't quite being matched with the product we were seeing at the university level. While when you look at places like, we'll say, just take, you know, 2 hours down the road, where London, there is this kind of synergy where, you know, you've gotten to see it a little bit. I was living there for a few years, where the high school level football, the summer football level, the minor football level, at all, in all aspects, when you see that, it makes sense why, and you obviously include other things like, you know, having Greg Marshall there, why the program has so much success. But just sticking with Essex football, Windsor region football for a bit, whether it's that component of being, you know, darn near in the United States of America, you're so far west, mm-hmm. and just the component of how skilled the talent coming out of that area is and how good that minor football program is. Just, you know, speak a little more on just what it's like growing up in that environment, being part of the football program, and perhaps now seeing the university program match the caliber of minor football that's been there for so long.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town just south of Essex called Harrow. And so growing up, it was always like, okay, well, if you want to play football, you're going to go play for the Essex Ravens. Because that's where the best coaching was, right? Especially if you're a town, my town didn't have a high school that had a program for football. So I ended up going out of town to Amherstburg to go play at General Amherst under Jim McDougal. And by playing under him, I learned quite a lot. He's a very talented coach. He ended up being the defensive coordinator at University of Windsor during those years with Austin Kennedy and Evan Prashanak, Nate O'Halloran, those guys. And that group of players, like, they were Essex Ravens players, and they played, they did stay home and they played for the Lancers, and they had quite a bit of success. You had guys like Jordan Briscason, who were an All-Canadian. They stayed back home. He went to St. Anne's, which is in Tecumseh, which is just outside of Windsor, the east side of Windsor. So he stayed home. Evan Prashanek stayed home. He always wanted to go to Windsor, but Austin Kennedy stayed home. Nate stayed home. And those were kind of, those are like basically four of their best five best players. Like a guy like Brad Adams, who went to Sandwich. That was a really strong program in the early 2000s and into the mid 2000s there. Guys like Brian Jones, who ended up playing in the CFL, played there. But all those guys, it was basically, if you wanted to go play the next level, you had to go play in the summer in the OVFL. And that's where a lot of us got really coached up in the summertime. Some programs didn't like sending their teams playing in the summer, because if you're competitive, they just didn't want us to play that much football, right? It wasn't, for some teams, it wasn't advantageous to have half of your team try and go play in the summer and then come play in the fall. But we've got some really strong high school programs there. It's kind of been a rotation of teams that have gone to the AA and Quad A OFSA bowl games. And like, I won a AA title at Amherst under Jim McDougal, and we always played against Herman, which is Harry Lumley. I'm not sure if you guys know Harry, but he's a legend around the area. He's been coaching for 35, 40 years. He's getting toward the end of his career now, but his team won a bowl game at the Metro Bowl this past year, and I think they went 3-3 in the regular season. They ended up sweeping the playoffs and going into the Metro Bowl. So we've had the talent here. We've had the talent down here. Like we said, we used to have Sandwich. That was a really good program. Holy Names is a really good program led by Rob McIntyre. I think they won the entire, like, they were ranked number one in Ontario the one year. They had guys like Theo Johnson, who played at Penn State. He's going to go in the NFL draft this year. Guys like Michael Herzog, he played at Hillsdale College in NCAA D2. And he just broke a bunch of records there. So the talent has always been down here. Like, Windsor and Essex has always been a football town. We appreciate good football. Like you said, we're close to the state. So the Detroit Lions and Michigan Wolverines and MSU Spartans are always teams that we always watch on Saturdays. It's always kind of a split if we're going to watch Canadian ball or NCAA ball on Saturdays and Sundays. And so I think a big part was that a lot of those guys, the top tier guys, some of them didn't stay. And that's why the program wasn't as successful in the late stages of Joe DeMore's career as possible. Like, he recruited all over the place, but unfortunately, like, a lot of those guys, you live in Windsor for your whole life. Some, you want to go away for university. A lot of guys went to Guelph. There's a lot of guys from Windsor that are on Guelph right now. Kane Stevenson, Vishon Genesis. I forget who else, but they're there right now. Oh, Braden McDougal. I played with his brother Cameron with the AKO for Atman. Braden's an absolute incredible linebacker. He played at Herman as well. And so to keep those guys here was difficult. But when JP Circelli came in, he was able to just recruit a little bit better. Like, it just seems like he's been able to tap into the Toronto market a little bit. He's really gone after American players and brought them in, especially because of the new rule change, where if an American player comes to Canada and graduates, he counts as a Canadian player in the CFL draft. So it wouldn't mess with the ratio that deals with the CFL. So I think they've done a really good job of being creative in who they recruit. And of course, like, the coaching staff, when you can bring three or four people from a previous staff, like bringing in your brother and your dad to come help you, that's a lot of continuity that you're going to bring to a program. They know how you work. They know what you want to do. They know how you plan practices. And JP had a lot of success at the OVFL, OSFL level with London. His last 2 years with the London Mustangs, he didn't lose a game. Not like, oh, he lost a couple games. No, he didn't lose one game. So this guy knows how to coach kids up and knows how to put them in the best position to win. So now that like the machine has been put in place here, you're seeing a lot of guys from either the States or Southwestern Ontario saying, hey, why don't I take a shot down at the end of the road and let's go play for the Windsor Lancers and let's go shock the world, because I think they're on the verge of something really special with the program this year. It couldn't quite get over the hump, right? The defense was very, very good. The offense was very complimentary. But when you're playing against those top tier programs, sometimes it comes down to a couple of plays in a game. And I think of that Western game specifically about how the Windsor was leading in the fourth quarter 10-7. And then three plays later, it's 21-10. Because Western scores a touchdown. They go up 14-10. They kick off to Windsor. They fumble on the kickoff. Two plays later, it's in the end zone. It's 21-10, just like that. So it's just part of the building process. And I'm really excited to see where the team goes. So full marks to the Sorcellis for, I don't think it's fair to say like the recruiting is completely different, because everyone recruits, right? It's just a matter of being able to get guys either from your area to stay, or they're getting a lot of players from London to come down to Windsor and stay, or you're getting guys that are transferring to come in, and they're coming in and playing big roles. So I don't know what the secret sauce is, but they've done a really good job. So the talent's always been here. It's whether or not you can keep them home and keep them playing for those 4 or 5 years to keep you in it, right? So you've only got a finite window of where you're going to be a solid team that can actually compete to be at the top of the conference, and they've got that right now.
Most definitely. In 2019, I had a chance to coach with the Guelph Griffins. And leading up into that, we also did some Team Ontario work where Coach Cercelli was the head coach for that. And even just in the few interactions that I had with them, the Don is very good at commanding a room. Even though this is his first time being, you know, the head coach, he's got a bunch of other U Sports coaches around him. He has a schedule, he has a practice, he has a way of doing things, and he commanded the room immediately as he got in there, which was so amazing to see. And I think really speaks to exactly like you're saying, he was due. He was due for something like this. And to think about just a few short years ago with Windsor and how the Lancers had been struggling and they had kind of been at the bottom tier of the OUA, to now look and see the landscape. And like you said, have guys stay from the Essex Ravens program, stay at the University of Windsor, and even start to steal some London players from Western and getting them to come down the 401 rather than going back up. That's massive, massive wins. If you can control the Essex Ravens and steal a few guys from London just in those two areas alone, my goodness, you're already set up for really great success. So really, shout out to JP Cercelli for all of the amazing work he's already done. And like you said, there's a special product being built at the end of the 401. And it's definitely something that people need to take advantage of and just get out and see, because it is really outstanding, some of the work they did. Obviously, like you said, you detailed the one home loss that they had this year to the Western Mustangs. It's 10-8 at halftime, and we're all looking around being like, if the offense can come alive just a little bit here, like, they're winning this game. And then Western, because they're pounding against the wall and they just keep doing their thing, they eventually find the end zone, obviously, and they come away with that one. But, like, there's no game other than maybe the regular season Laurier game where I watched these Windsor Lancers and were like, oh, they're out of the game. Every single one, they were competitive as all hell. And I love to see the grit that Coach Cercelli brings to this. I had a chance to see him talk just a couple of times through pregame speeches and that, and I'm ready to run through a wall for the Don. So I can only imagine how his players feel.
Yeah, so back when JP was with the London Mustangs, I had a chance to interview him at a halftime one day, and I kind of just asked him about, like, what's your philosophy? Like, how do you command your players, kind of thing? I don't remember what the specific question was, but the thing that I took away from that was he said, well, our team, we only practice twice a week. So if you don't make prep, like, so there's a lot of install and there's a lot of things that they do, because, you know, guys that are that age, they were going off and you got to work, you got to do certain things, you got to finish school. He says, yeah, we only practice twice a week. And so being able to have a team that went undefeated for 2 years, I know they had some really good players like the Brown brothers and things like that were on those teams, but they have that level of success by only practicing twice a week. And of course he might've had, you know, a walkthrough somewhere along there, but if you're only practicing twice a week, you got to be able to command and instruct and teach a lot during those days. And I that just stuck out to me when I had a chance to talk with him about that. I'm sure that the schedule has increased a bit now that they're at the university, but it's just one thing that I really took away. The fact that this guy can command a room right away, and he's a leader of men. There's no other way to say it. Like, sometimes you watch him on the sideline and he'll get after a group of players about something, or he'll get after the referees about something. And you can just say, this guy can lead. This guy can absolutely lead men. And if he thinks that something happens like against one of his players and they don't get a call, he's going after the refs about it. He's going to go and try and work and try and get that call the next time, because he wants that respect. He wants his team to have that respect from the referees, from the other team, from the whole league. And so when I see him like instructing guys on the sideline, like obviously I'm calling the game and I can only see so much. But when I see him like with a body full of passion talking to a group, like say he's talking to the D-line or the O-line or something like that about executing a play, or say they didn't get something done on the special teams, he's going and he's going to talk to those group, or he's talking and he's getting in the ear of his coordinator about what he wants to see the next time out there. So the level of respect and just the respect that he gives to his players back is something that I really have taken. That's been a big change, right? So the word that everyone likes to use is culture. Oh, we're trying to build a culture. You hear it with the Detroit Lions, with Dan Campbell. We're building culture. We're all about grit. Well, if you're not there on a week-to-week basis, or if you don't see a practice every once in a while, like you don't understand. But this guy can lead men, and it's absolutely fantastic. I have a busy work schedule, so I can only be at so many practices. And I caught a training camp practice early in the year. I think it was this past year, or I don't remember if it was this year or last year. But someone did something wrong on an assignment or something, and so he made him run a lap, and an entire 400 meter lap, and he's getting after that guy from yard one to all the way to yard 400. And when the one, I don't remember who it was, but he's jogging up, he's trying to finish up his 400 meters, right? And he's going to come back to the drill, and Strasselli's like, you're doing one more, let's go. Like, it's like, no, not just one, we're going to do it again, so that you can get this right. And you can tell that is what is going on, that the execution, especially on the defensive side of the ball, has been so good the last couple of years. And then it's really been something to take in. So obviously the offense has been good. Like the running game has been good, but the way that the defense has really risen up under Pat Donovan is really something that I'm excited to see moving forward.
You know, I was so set in my mind. I wanted to start talking about those running backs who we all love dearly, you know, including Tom's, adopted American son and Joey Zorn. But you talked about the defense, so we got to dive into that defensive line, because, mm-hmm. you know, the defense as a whole was just so phenomenal, not just this past year, but over these last few years. And
yeah, the last 2 years, the defense has been the story of the team for sure.
1,000%. And what I love so much about, you know, to simplify it, if I may, to talk about just the two obvious standouts in Mufta heck out of my way, Ageli, and Kaladia Musin. Like, not only are these guys game wreckers, but it goes back to that piece of, you got a young guy in Kaladi coming from, I believe, Minnesota, correct? And then Mufta, who's or is it Maine? I don't know what the MN.
Mufta Ageli is from Windsor. He went to Kennedy.
Mufta from Windsor. Sorry, and Kaladi from the States, though, correct?
Yeah, I can't recall. I think Kaladi might be from Toronto, but don't quote me on that. But whatever it is, like, it goes back to the recruiting talk. You got a guy that's staying home that's going to be your nose tackle, who's going to be an absolute game wrecker, and then you can go recruit a guy to go play on the outside and clean things up in sacks. Like, that's absolutely incredible what they've been able to do. But that entire D-line, that entire group is very, very good. Like, they've been able to keep things going for a very long time, for the past couple of years. They've been very consistent. And it's not very often that you see them getting pushed off the block, pushed off the ball, or missing assignments in that way, right? So they're, for the most part, they're clogging up their lanes, and they're at the point of attack. They're beating their man, and they're getting into the backfield a considerable amount.
100%. And I think for me and Tom, I'll just last thing on that, Tom, or we'll keep it going. Like, two former offensive linemen here, and you're seeing moved up bench press dudes and just command double and triple teams when you have, you know, if not for an incredibly talented young man rushing off the edge in Windsor, the best pass rusher in the province and maybe in the country in Kaladi on one-on-one, or you're now having to commit in a tight end or a running back. And it just, like, it's like, golly, it must be, like, fits. Like, this is truly the nightmare fuel of offensive line coaches and coordinators for 10 mm-hmm. other teams in the province. Like, it's so special to watch.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about their eligibility. So it would be incredible if both of those guys could come back, if not just one. If we lose both, that's going to be a big pull. But I have faith in the program that they're going to be able to find guys that are already in the system that are ready to take over. I'm really a big fan of the linebacking core that they had this year. Devin Verisic is one guy who kind of plays on the outside. He'll slide over and play in the middle. Sometimes he'll pass rush. He's someone that I've literally watched play since he was 12 years old because of my connections with the Essex Ravens. I used to be their PA guy. And so when you see these peewee players going in and wrecking things in summer league when they're 12, 13, 14, and then moving up into the JV and varsity ranks and then stay home with the hometown team, that's so satisfying to watch because you're literally watching these kids grow up in front of you. Like Braden McDougal from Guelph, I literally watched him play since he was 11 or 12 years old. And I've seen these guys get it done. So those guys are absolutely fantastic. And the one play that I will say kind of not changed the season, but like solidified how good of a team this Lancers team was going to be was against Queens when Devin Verisic picked off Russell Weir. Was it Weir? Mm-hmm. Was the backup QB?
Weir or Leo would have been the two. Yeah.
Yeah. He picked it because it was a turnover. Queens had good field position. I was like, okay, like if they can get something going here, they can take the lead. And then the next play, Devin Verisic picks it off and runs it back to take the lead. And that was the defense coming to play on a day that the offense didn't have their best day. So for me to see that, so seeing during the call, I'm saying the hometown boy wanted to put the team on the map. He puts a gut punch to the Queens Gaels right when we thought that it was going to be a haymaker time for the Queens Gaels. Like that's absolutely like I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it right now because you've literally seen this kid do this for about 8 to 10 years prior to this, and it's just exciting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say one comment on that defense. I'd say it's one of, if not the best front seven in certainly in the OUA. I put them up against pretty much anyone in U Sports right now with guys like what we've already talked about, Mufta Gelly and Claudia Moose and Maceo Christmas, that real linebacker for them, has been outstanding. Now, he is in his fifth year. I believe that he is done as of this mm-hmm. past year. But watching him play and not just be able to make the tackle when you need to, but you see his movement. You see how he's able to read the offense as they're coming through. It was really outstanding to be able to watch. And so many of these games, we really saw that defense take over, and it was why they really came to that. I think the eye-opening one, Zach and I had the chance to watch Mac versus Windsor at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
Well, Windsor obviously came away with that one. I don't think that they played to their best ability. I think my real eye-opening moment for how good this defense was against the Guelph game in week two. I saw that Guelph team constantly have pressure in the back end, nobody able to do anything. And we've already talked about how good we think those, especially those skill players are for the Griffins. You have the two-headed quarterback tandem back there. Donovan Malloy really does his thing. He ripped one off for a 75-yard. But other than that, like he had like 30 yards rushing. They really couldn't do anything. And I was watching this going, oh my goodness. I know this Guelph team has struggled, but this is one of the best front sevens I've ever seen.
Yeah, I didn't get to catch very much of the McMaster game. My cousin was actually getting married that night, so I was in between dancing on the dance floor and things. I was watching it on the live stream, and I would catch, okay, they're doing this or this, doing that. But that second game against Guelph was absolutely an eye-opener. They rushed for 488 yards in that game, and they made Guelph look kind of ordinary on their offense, look kind of ordinary. But you saw how talented, how successful Tristan Abboud was at the, for the rest of the year. They were absolutely just all over him in the first quarter, and they pulled him out after a couple of series, and they just had Marshall. Was that the best?
Marshall McRae.
Yeah. Marshall McRae, and he's fantastic, and he played, and he did well to get them back into it. But it was just that front seven, like you said, I think they sacked him two or three times in the opening quarter. I think he was 1 for 8 for 3 yards before they pulled him. And that was just the defense coming out. And it was Labor Day weekend, and the crowds were huge, and the people were just there, and the running backs, they absolutely just were incredible. The offensive line was incredible. You guys gave the coach of the week to Randall Beardy. After that, he's a friend of mine. He's a great guy. I followed him in his CFL career. I had him on my TV show when I had that in the area, and just the passion that he has is really gone through into the offensive line. Obviously, JP Cercelli played offensive line. Joe Cercelli played offensive line. Randy played in the CFL, won a Grey Cup with the Ottawa Red Blacks there. So they've been able to recruit a lot of really good players on that offensive line. And one of the big ones was Jackson Morkin, who is a Windsor boy. He went to Tecumseh Vista and actually coached against him when I was coaching at Amherst. And this guy was just a man among boys. It was just one of those things where, like, okay, if he's defensive end on the right side, okay, we're pitching left, and we're just going to hope that he does not chase us down during the backside. And he has been absolutely incredible. I wouldn't be surprised to see him at the next level rather soon. So that Guelph game was absolutely an eye opener. 488 yards rushing, 2-0 for the first time in a long time for the program. And they just built off of that. They shut out Waterloo the next week, and I know obviously it was a shutout, but it was a lot closer than that. Then the next week, forget who the fourth game was, but Ottawa. They won that. Was that Ottawa?
Ottawa, yeah.
Oh yeah, they came back and they won that. Nick Domofsky with a big quarterback sneak at the end of that game to put them on top there. And then the next week they come back and they're playing Queens, and like the buzz around the stadium's like, I think we've got ourselves a really good team here. Like, and that was the litmus test, right? We talked about it prior to that game. I sent it a question to you guys. I was like, I think this is going to be a big game between Alex Freakin and Dan Skelton to see who's in that top echelon of quarterbacks in the league. And unfortunately, Alex went down with that broken arm. And I actually called Alex's AA basketball championship game when he was in high school. And like, I read the name. I was like, hey, I called my color guy. I was like, is this the same guy? He's like, yeah, he's the quarterback of Queens now. And he was actually the one that gave me the intel that he had the broken arm. And I was like, that's a shame, because this would have been an absolute, it would have been like a statement game for either program. But Queens played really well in that game, despite not having Breakin, despite not having like the passing attack that they wanted to. And Windsor's defense is what really won that game. The offense was okay. It was good enough to win, but it was the defense making stops, and that pick six by Devin Versick that put them over the edge and put them at 5-0 for the first time since 1977. Like, that's a long time, man. Mm-hmm. So, and then it just built up the anticipation for the game next week against Western. And that was a phenomenal game. Probably my favorite call of all time was Giovanni Cunningham's punt return touchdown in that game. I actually jumped up onto my chair, because I stand on the concourse when I do the games there. And I jumped up onto my chair because so many people stood up to watch the play, and I have to watch it. I'm standing on my chair, and he's like, Giovanni Cunningham's got 1 minute to be. Cunningham, touchdown, Windsor. Like, it was just thrilling. And it's just been so fun. And the crowds really came out in force. Like, once you get to 4-0, okay, that group against Western against Queens, that game was huge. It was probably the most people I'd seen at a game before. And then the next week against Western, it was absolutely packed. I believe they said it was over six or seven thousand people that were at that game, and that's a number that we have not seen at the University of Windsor probably ever. So I went back and I did the math after the season. Someone had posted about what the attendance were from the league, and we were number five in U Sports, and that includes a game against York. No offense to York, but that's the last game of the regular season against York. You know, I don't know how many people were there, but it's not a game like they'd already punched their ticket to be the number three team. So they're like, okay, we're gonna have a home game here next week, and still the people were there. So it's just like the entire community has bought into this program, and it's very exciting to see.
I love hearing all that. And again, you know, in so many ways, going back to what you mentioned earlier about just being able to win the recruiting program and hold on to guys from the region, as a Toronto guy, not to change lanes on it, it gives me hope in terms of the future of some of the Toronto teams, U of T and York, where, you know, the conversation, and obviously we can see it going up and down your roster, of how so many talented guys out of the city, that if either of these two teams get their act together and hold on to that talent, that they can really perhaps launch themselves into that next, well, there's a few tiers to climb. And as you said, it comes down to that leadership at the top. But, you know, I'm so happy Tom brought up the name of Maceo Christmas. And obviously, with his eligibility, what it is, that's a big blow. And as we mentioned, with some of those guys in the D line, but you know, there was a lot said this year, and rightfully so. And me and Tom spoke a lot about the young man out of Laurier and Ethan Grigorsic, and the year that he had, being this true redshirt freshman. And when we had Jack Moore on in the preseason and talking about, you know, this guy's like a legit, like he's 6'3", 225, and he's going to start off the jump and all these things and da-da-da-da-da. And you watch him out there, and it doesn't look like a freshman and all these things. But then you turn to your Windsor Lancers. Mm-hmm. And again, staying in that linebacking core, y'all have your own 6'3", 225 young man in Jason Rashatse, mm-hmm. who was just, you know, perhaps because, you know, and again, why I'm so happy to connect with you now, just to be able to have that line of communication moving forward, to, you know, be able to stay up on all things Windsor Lancers, not realizing this guy is in his first year is a rookie. And
yeah,
so speak on the year Rashatse had, but then as well that standpoint of, sure, Christmas is going out, but Rashatse gets this, at least this 1 year underneath this guy who's been a stalwart in that linebacking core for the Windsor Lancers, showing him the ropes, showing him what it is to play for this team.
So yeah, Maceo was actually one of those American players like I talked about who came in. I forget what college he played for down south, but they recruited him to come back up. He probably has aspirations to play in the CFL. So that's another big credit to the Cercellis. They've recruited a lot of really good American players that maybe, you know, might not be thinking about NCAA or things like that. By being able to reach out to them and say, hey, we've got a spot for you here, and we've got a lot of playing time for you. Let's go. Maceo did a really good job the past 2 years playing that middle linebacker. And speaking about Rashatse, it seems to me that he got the chances that he did because of injuries, right? Devin Verisic went out for a little bit with an injury. A couple of other players were out, and he just came in and played lights out ever since he came in. The one tackle I can think of, I think it was on a third down. Don't remember who it was against, but I just said, and it's Rashatse coming out of a shotgun right into the backfield, drops him for a loss, like turnover on downs. Like this guy can play. And he's so fast. Yeah. He's really, really talented. I can't wait to see what kind of steps he takes next year. Yeah.
Yeah. That I think that we've talked about how unbelievable that defense is. And I'm happy we spent as much time as we did, because it really was one of the best that we've ever seen. But I have to go over to the offense. Now,
yeah, let's talk about the fun side of the ball.
Now, you've got the three-headed monster in that run game with Joey Zorn, Wegby Mambo, and Christopher John that's back there. And you really saw them, once again, that Guelph game was the breakout party for Windsor, both offensively and defensively there. Like you said, over 400 yards rushing in just that single game. But I really wanted to dive into the pass game here, because in the first four games of the season, Zach and I are looking at each other, and exactly like you said, going into this Queens game, we're thinking Danny Skelton's a top five quarterback in the OUA. Like, he looks really special. He looks really good. And then we start to see him play against some of the top tier echelon in the OUA, and he struggles. Obviously, he struggles a bit. In the last four big games, other than York, you've got Queens, Western, Laurier, and then you play against Carleton. And those last four games, Danny throws seven interceptions. Yeah. Now, There's a lot of factors that go into that, obviously, and I don't mean to put anything on any of the onus solely on Danny's back. He played fantastic in certain times here, but you having a front row seat to that, what did you see in Danny Skelton that was different from the first couple games to the latter part of the season?
Well, I want to pull it back to last season, because when they started the regular season last year, they had basically three starting quarterbacks. They had Carter Zinger, a guy from Saskatchewan, and they had Josh Schimm, who came out from out east, and then they had Dan Skelton, who's from Calgary. So, and all of those quarterbacks played last year. All of them had their chance, and it was Danny Skelton who showed that he had the arm strength to be the starting quarterback. So once he was able to establish himself as the starting quarterback, you did see some growth. But now that, you know, he got into the big games as the starter, you did see that there's a couple warts there, and that only can come from playing the top tier teams, right? And so I don't think that he played poorly. It's just that those echelon of teams, they will limit what you can do. And I think him fighting through that adversity will help him moving forward. Because I'm sure that's going to be a wide open camp at the beginning of training camp to see who's going to be the starter between him and Nick Demoski. I don't think that you should go into any camp thinking that, okay, this guy is our starter because he's our starter, right? Unless you're, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes or guys like that. Like there's really no clear cut number one if they don't perform. So I think it's a good thing that he struggled against those teams a little bit, because he seems to be a guy that will work to get better. And from what I've seen, now I'm not the all-knowing eye. He is putting in the work to get better. From social media and stuff like that, it's not like, Nick Demoski got the ball in the Carlton game, and he got the ball in the Laurier game, and Danny's gonna transfer out. I don't think that's part of his makeup, and I don't think that the coaching staff would want that, right? I don't think that you're never gonna let a guy who's 6'3", 6'4", that can sling the ball to every part of the field, you're not going to let him walk away from your program. And rightfully so, he belongs here. He's a Windsor Lancer. I like Danny Skelton. I like the job that he's done. And I think that the growth that you can have, man, think about like guys like Austin Kennedy, like playing against the big boys in Western and Laurier and stuff. Like he had some tough games and he had some tough performances. And you know what? He learned how to win. And so, like, learning how to win is an absolute skill that people don't really think, oh, like, he's just a winner. Like, no, you have to learn how to win. You have to use the guys that are around you. Obviously, you have to use the coaching staff that's around you. And just to the best of your ability, you have to go and just play the game. Like, you can't just say, oh, well, I'm not going to do good, so I'm just not going to try. Like, no, like, what are you talking about? Like, you're playing for JP Circelli. He's going to put you in a position to win. And if he doesn't think that you have it that day, he's going to go to the next guy. And that's all he did with Nick Demoski. And it was the right move to do. Danny struggled that game. He wasn't seeing the field as well as JP would have wanted him to. So he made the change to Demoski, and a guy that's been with a little bit, like just getting some passes here and there. He basically came in as a second, like a short yardage situation QB for a majority of the year. He got the first passes that he threw last year were in York game. He played in the second half of the game against York. Danny Skelton threw four touchdown passes in the first half against York. The rest of the game was Nick Demoski. That's the only playing time he had that year. And then he bounced back and came into the game against Carlton and then just absolutely tore it up. It's just super exciting the way that he commanded the offense. And that speaks to his experience at the other level, playing at Bell River and with the Essex Ravens. So the only way that you're going to get better is by playing these top teams. And I think it's a 100% an advantage that the Lancers have two quarterbacks now that can say that they've played against the top teams in the league, and they can bounce things off of each other and they say, okay, what did you say here? Okay, in this situation, what are we going to do here? Like, what's the stuff? Should we change the drop, or like, is there a second play that we should have? And that comes from the offensive coaching staff, right? I'm just talking just to talk about it, but like there's a lot of factors, and there's a lot of good things that can happen by having two quarterbacks that have played. Hey, I played against Laurier. This is what I saw. Okay, now you're gonna play here. Like Windsor played absolutely incredibly in that OUA semifinal game, and they were a couple plays away from winning. Like, so I don't think that it's a bad thing to have two quarterbacks that are starter caliber. The only difference is that one's a third year and the other one's a first year. So I think that they're going to do really well. Danny is a good quarterback. He's a good player. He's a good athlete. And I think that he will be able to lead this team if he's given the QB1 status. And I think what people don't realize about the Canadian game, you need two quarterbacks. Because a lot of the time, these quarterbacks are going down. Like, we think, like, we look at the NFL, like, by week 13 or 14, like, 38 different quarterbacks had started for these teams. Because things happen, man. Either guys aren't playing well, so they get pulled, or they get hurt. And you need to fill up that production right after that. So I think they're going to be just fine at the QB spot for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My apologies, Tom. Go ahead.
No, just one last thing that I wanted to chime in there. I had the pleasure of working with Cable 14 this past year and covering a lot of the Hamilton games and the Hamilton City Championship game. And there's a quarterback coming out of Bishop Tonis name of Ryan Begadin, who has just committed to the University of Windsor Lancers. And
okay.
He is a gamer. I've seen him. He's got a cannon of an arm. I love the way that he was able to manage the game. He took it over in certain places and allowed his running back to do his thing in certain places. I'm very excited to see what he can do under Coach Trisselli and in this Windsor Lancer squad. I don't know if he's necessarily ready to play week one, year one, but learning underneath Coach Cerselli, Danny Skeleton, even Nick Domofsky as well, I'm sure he's going to start pushing those guys to be the best that they can, because he's a really special talent. So there's a lot of excitement in that quarterback room right now. And like you said, I think the main thing that I wanted to hear, and you answered perfectly, is does the Windsor faithful still have faith in Danny Skeleton? And I think you said that. Yes, you still do.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for bringing up the recruit. I forgot that was a couple of weeks ago that he committed. And that's a big get. And I believe they just signed another player who's a DB, McNull, yep. Mike McNull or Matt McNull. He was an all Ontario defensive back. So for the program to, you know, reach out to these programs and say, hey, we're building something special down here, and we want you down at the end of the road to be part of our defensive backfield. I think that's a huge boon there. And I can think that having Begadin, right? Is that the last name?
Yep.
Having him come in 100% will just increase competition, and I don't think you can be upset about that at all. I think that's exactly great. So you guys are coming down for training camp? Is that what you're saying? So we're going to watch training camp together?
Hey, I might have to. I've been championing these Windsor Lancers since last year. I need a T-shirt. I need a jersey. I need something.
Yeah, I think we can work out that. I might have a couple of connections that can hook you up with that. You can stay in my basement.
I see. We'll print the T-shirts. The road ends at the Don's place, something like that. But you know,
the coaching staff, they've said, like, if you listen to some of the pregame speeches, like, that's the thing that JP says. They got to come to the end of the road. It's the end of the road, man. Like, it's either the 401 in Huron Church, and then it's the States. We're at the end of the road in Canada. The 401 does not stop in London as much as some people think. But it's fantastic, the things that they've been able to do and to build up the program. And I think that they're in a great position to be in. Obviously, if a couple of players are, like, some of those senior players are out of eligibility, or they go to the next level, it's great for them that they can do that. But I think that they've got the pieces here, and they've got the steeds, the charges, as they would like to say, as the Lancers, to keep this program going. And I think a lot of that has to do with Patrick Donovan too. Like, we haven't talked about him enough. He's been a really, really, really good defensive coordinator for the University of Windsor. And I don't remember who said it. It may have been Deshaun Stevens who said that. He thought that Patrick Donovan would be the next person to kind of get a crack at a head coaching job somewhere in U Sports there. So yeah, it's all things are going good, man. And I can't wait to see it. They are going to have a wall of honorees. Like, they're having a special dinner in like April before spring camp and like ID camps on the 13th, honoring some past players like Brian Jones, who played in the CFL for a long time. And I believe they're going to honor Gino Fracas and his family. Just something, a new initiative, like similar to what Zach was saying about the big Guelph dinner, the Wildman dinner. I think you said that, right? It's just something that they're trying to build. That's something different. Like, they've done a really good job of hosting camps, hosting clinics. Like, they've hosted coaching clinics at the University of Windsor. They've been able to recruit all over the place, bring kids in, even if it's just for a game day visit. Like I like seeing people like being there on game days and seeing just like dozens and dozens and dozens of recruits at each game. Cause field pass. So like, what's to say? Oh, recruit. I'm like, oh, okay. Got some big boys and like, and some really good looking athletes that are, even if they're just on campus, just for a visit, it's a huge boon to the program that they can bring them in and just introduce them and at least have a conversation with them about committing down here. Cause they have an opportunity for these guys to play. Like you talk about some of these programs like Western, do you want to sit for 3 years and then play maybe a year or two? If you're kind of one of those guys that needs to bump up their body or needs to like just learn at the post-secondary level, it's a big factor for these kids that maybe 18, 19, 20 years old, they don't want to wait 2 years. Like, hey, why don't you come down to the end of the road to Windsor? We've got a strong program, but we're going to give you an opportunity to compete, to come be on the field and be part of something special. So,
and you can even scoot over to Trader Joe's on the weekend and grab yourself some sweet snacks from across the border. You know,
full disclosure, I've never been to Trader Joe's. I'm more of a Mexican town guy myself.
Yeah, I mean the gems are endless, of course, when you get just across the border there. You know, I feel like we got to dive into the running backs a little bit more and just that run game.
Yeah, we've been talking
general.
For an hour. We haven't even talked about the most stacked position group on the team. It's been crazy.
Like, it's bonkers because like you have this fire and ice combo in this bowling ball of a man in Christopher John, shout out to Chaminade College, who just, you know, is downhill as can be, this lightning quick guy in Wabi Mambo, and Liam Talbot kind of coming in from the more slot position when he gets these jet handoffs. But then you have this guy who puts it all together in Joey Zorn, pride of Flint, Michigan. Tom's adopted American son out there for your Windsor Lancers, who just kind of does it all. Like, you know, it's and you can look at that and say, and again, just to the credit of the offensive staff, where you can say, well, when you have that kind of talent, it's easy. But I might respond and say, but to know how to use them effectively, like the number of times where me and Tom are going through a box score at the end of the game, we're like, it seemed like a quiet game for Zorn, and he'll have his numbers, but John has the bulk of the carries, or Mambo's got the carry, and just that ability to feel the rhythm of the game and know when, okay, we got to feed this guy, or here's how we want to play into what we're doing right now. Like, obviously, just talk about that whole running game to whatever like insights you have, but also to that ability of like, or from whatever insight you have of that standpoint of to know when it's time to, hey, we got to, you know, hey, Talbot's waiting for that jet sweep. It's open now. We got to hit him, or, you know, it's time to get downhill a little bit. Let's get John in there and get him rumbling. Cause yeah, it's crazy. We're an hour into this. Like, this run game is it's stupid good.
Yeah. Like last year, you guys talked a lot about the running game being as good as it was. Joey Zorn had a fantastic year last year, but this year, I really think that it was Christopher John that took the lead bell cow the lead bell cow role. And that's because Joey Zorn was hurt. He missed a couple of games cause he was hurt. But Joey, he picked up right where he left off. And the things that make Joey so good, he can make guys miss. He can make guys miss. And then he has that acceleration to get to the next level. And he can hit you with some big gainers. Very similar to Wabi Mambo. Like Wabi, whenever he gets the ball, like sometimes he goes a little bit too east-west and not getting upfield enough. But when he makes the correct cut, it's almost a touchdown every single time because he's got that burner speed that can burn you, that can just kill it. I think about that game against Guelph where it's 488 rushing yards. Maybe we should get that on a shirt. 488 versus Guelph. And we'll send it to Zach so he can put it in behind his thing. And to think that, okay, well, I think it was Joey Zorn had like 112. Chris John had 135. Wavy Mumbo had 88 with like a 60-yard touchdown. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to add in Liam Talbot as well. We're going to have, 75-yard rushing touchdown on a jet sweep. And Liam, I think, is a really good – I'm really glad that you brought Liam up, Zach, because last year he had over 1,100 all-purpose yards, whether it was punt returns, kick returns, receiving, or rushing. So he was really kind of a Swiss Army knife this year. They gave him, like, obviously he was returning and like, but they limited his snaps on offense. It wasn't like they were trying to feed him the ball too much, but when he did get the ball, he was very effective. And that's such a luxury to have. And after they rushed that 488 against Guelph, I asked JP Cercelli about, like, just like, talk to us about having the ability just to hand off to four different players if you need to. And he just said that's it's just a credit to the program that we've built, that we have these options to go there, and that we have these options to run the ball in so many different ways. And like, as you, like you said, like, all four guys do way different things, and depending on what personnel group they have on defense, you can really exploit what you have. Like, say it's a spread and you put in Wadey Bombo there, you give him a zone read, and he might bounce it outside for a big gainer. And you saw that against Carlton. He had some huge plays in the fourth quarter there for Wavy, and it was like, sometimes he would come in like, oh, they got Wavy Mumbo in the background, and then be like, oh my god, Wavy just had a humongous run. Like, that's why you bring him in there, and that's why you have the faith in those guys. So I think it's absolutely an incredible thing to have. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone besides Western have that kind of ability to put three or four different backs out there, and they'll just each tear you up because of where you are. But you got to look at the source. JP Cercelli spent a lot of time under Greg Marshall, so I think he learned quite a few things under Yoda there, the Jedi Master Greg Marshall there. And I played against Donnie Marshall too. So he was a really, really good player too back in the day. So when he was playing for the London Junior, I think they were the Falcons then, the London Falcons. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's I don't know, man. Like, there's a lot of really good things going on. Whether they can keep it going on, it's going to depend on how the offseason goes, how training camp goes. And when we finally get this schedule out, I would love to have this schedule so I can plan my spring, plan my fall out, so we can see what we can do, like what we can expect. I'm really looking forward to what this team can do. And one more thing. Yeah, I know we're probably going to be up against it. The defensive backfield for Windsor has gotten a lot better too. Mm-hmm. You got guys like Ethan John coming up. Guy should have been an all-star. I don't care. I don't know who was voting or what they did, but that guy should have been an all-star. Istvan Acebo-Dotsie was an all-star. Fantastic player. I believe he is graduating out. Guy's got like Harrison Daly, who came up with the play of the year against Carlton. That was his first pick of the year, by the way, when he picked up Tristan Lefebvre in the end zone to kind of thwart their best drive of the game. And it just talent everywhere, man. And it's really exciting to see, and I can't wait to see what they do in the fall.
Yeah, I love the fact that you brought up Ethan John's name, because you can't not talk about the guy who led this amazing defense in tackles. He finished with 49 and a half total tackles on the year on one of, if not the best defense in the OUA. So you have to acknowledge a guy like that. And you have guys like Devin Vrusic and Bretton McDougal, Maceo Christmas, all of those guys on this list. And Ethan John is the one who's leading everything off there. So I love the fact that you brought his name up. He does definitely deserves his credits there as well.
Yeah. And Bretton is the son of Jim McDougal, who was my head coach at Amherst. And so I've known Bretton ever since he was 10 years old. And so to see him grow into he's going to be a CFL player. To grow into that it's a cool experience as well, for sure. Cause I know that he comes from a good family too.
Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about this, and maybe there's a mystique that we want to keep in that way, but I have to ask, in your opinion, what is it about playing in Windsor that just thwarts so many people? We talk about the Golden Arches that are there. We talk about everything else. But like you mentioned, there's a lot of years in there, even before Coach Cercelli gets there, where there's 4-4 seasons. And like those 4-4 seasons, a lot of time it's perfect at home and struggles away. And we talked about how difficult it is when you're traveling all across the province and starting at one end or whatever else. What is it about Windsor Stadium that just confounds so many teams going into there? It's so difficult to play. I don't think I've ever seen a team really play their absolute best football there. It's always a slug.
Yeah, I think the fact that you brought up being able to struggle on the road, like they did have some really strong seasons there. I remember talking to Joe DeMore before the end of his tenure at the university, and he says that, Brad, I don't know if you've known this, like we haven't won a road game in like 3 years. And it's just difficult. Anytime they would win a big game, like there was a couple years where they beat Guelph when they were nationally ranked at the beginning of the year, and they beat them the second week of the season, they have a really good year. Or they would beat like York and U of T, and they would have really good games. Or if they did lose at home, it was usually in the last second on like a Campbell Fair field goal or in an overtime game against Mac all those years ago. I believe that's when Darrell Townsend was playing there, but you're right. There is something about playing in Windsor. I don't know if it is the Golden Arches. I used to get upset when you guys would make fun of the Golden Arches. I'm not going to lie.
It's not making fun. We're honoring the Golden Arches. It's not easy to play there.
Hold on, the sponsorship's right there. You know, like Coach Roselli, the Don, McDon's. It's oh my gosh, sorry.
The Ambassador Bridge is right behind you, too. We're going to have the Gordie Howe Bridge that's going to be to the left of the stadium. So I'll make sure to point that out on the broadcast this year. I don't know. It has to be like, especially lately, it has to be the environment. All the crowds that were there this year, like when they played against Guelph and they put 488 yards rushing against the Guelph Griffins, it was packed. It was the most people I had ever seen at a Windsor Lancers game. And I've been one being a fan and then being a journalist and then being a broadcaster. It was the most people I'd ever seen. The hype is real. And just when you have a product that you can be proud of, the people will come. And a big thing of that is a lot of people come from London to watch Windsor, right? You talk about, you know, like this, the smaller stadiums that have bigger guys. Like, we have an open air stadium. It's a track stadium that we have at Alumni Field. So there's only bleachers on the one side, where the high rise is there. It's all hill space on the other side. And to have the noise and the crowd people, and like, they just take up every single foot that they can around the perimeter of the field. Like, I think that the environment that they've created in the last couple of years has been really special. And it's almost like the tide has turned. Like, we're right there. And for a long time we weren't there. And we sometimes we would get close, but then, you know, like in the fourth quarter against Western a couple of years ago, they were close on the road against Western. They were close, but they couldn't pull it out because Western does what Western does. This year, there's a big difference between that road game last year to this year's game, or the 2023 game, when we were leading 10-8 at halftime. And then the fourth quarter happened, and we just didn't execute properly enough to get a win. I think about, like, the only bad game that – well, not bad, but, like, the only game where they struggled in at home that I've covered recently was that game last year against Taylor Elgesma and Laurier. And that was basically his coming out party, because he had just earned the starting job. I think it was third or fourth week of the year. And he just absolutely lit it up. And like, since then, no one's had a game like that. Like, Evan Hillock put through very well against Windsor in that game. He played well because he's Evan Hillock. But that was really the best that I've seen someone play at the University of Windsor. Like, Tristan Lefebvre, great quarterback in that playoff game. He didn't play all that great against Windsor in the playoff game. And that has to do with the environment, the defense, and just the ability to rise up. And, you know, when he got people, you know, Windsor's a blue collar town. I make vans. I work at Chrysler. I make vans. A lot of people go out there. They're big football fans. They want to go, they want to support, they want to spend their money on a product that they can be proud of. And when you can put together solid seasons like that, they are going to come. I don't know what the season ticket numbers are. I don't have that. I don't get those numbers, but I have to think that they have just skyrocketed in the last couple of years. Cause it's only like $40 to get a season pass for the year. Like, okay. Like, I'll put down 220s and I'll watch, you know, fantastic football for 12, 15 hours of the year. So it's been fantastic. And, hopefully they can keep it a very difficult environment to play in this year as well. When we get the schedule.
Well, you know, my internet froze up there for half a second. I hope it didn't screw anything up too severely on the end of this episode. But I think that's a sign that I should wrap it, but not before throwing this last question that I just had. I was so tempted to ask someone from the Windsor area. 31 yep. seconds left in that semifinal game. Brett Hedges, hold or no hold?
It's tough for me to say, because I was actually I was driving, because I was watching the game at home, and powered. I was on my way to go do a Lancers basketball game, and I had my phone in the car, and I was actually I had it connected to the car, and I had the phone like where like the dash is, and I was like watching the game. I'm driving the game. I'm watching, and I turned on the game like I as I pulled in, they had scored. And so I was excited. So I stopped the car and I ran inside, because we had to do a varsity basketball game right then. And they had the game going on in the arena. And I go in there. And I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean it was a hold? So I've seen the replay. I don't think it was a hold, personally. That is my, that is 100% my bias that's coming through there. But I can understand, this is this, I was a former hockey referee. I can understand why they threw a flag in that position or why it may have looked like a hold, but I guarantee that that is not something that JP Cercelli coaches. So, and it's just, it's such a bummer because they were in, right? And then they get a couple of good shots at the end of the end, at the end of the game into the end zone. Those were good too. And just like, just, it's just perfect drama. And of course, to have Jack Moore on the call with all those exciting plays, what more could you ask for? Really? Like, what more can you ask for? You've got the best commentator in basically in U Sports doing a, probably the best game of the year. And it comes down to something like that. That's just the way it goes. And I'll say this, I'm not super close with the program. Like me and JP don't text or anything like that, but I sometimes I get these group chains because I'm the media, right? And so they'll send this. He sent a big text afterwards saying, for all of you guys that support us, thank you so much for doing that. That's not how we wanted this game to end. And that's not how we envisioned this season to end, but we are going to use this and we're going to move on and we're going to be even better next year because we don't want that to happen again. So it might have been the best thing for this team just to have a chip on their shoulder to get, you know, get that late call. Hey man, if you're that referee and you're at Laurier and it's that close, you know what? I might have thrown that flag too because it's a split second thing and these guys have such a hard job and they're going to get scrutinized either way. You're either going to get it from Michael Falls from Laurier for not calling it, or you're going to get it from JP Cercelli for calling it. So it's just that just that's just football, man. I don't know. So I've seen the replay. I don't think it was a hold. I've talked to Joe DeMore about it. He doesn't think that it was a hold, but ultimately the referee is correct. So the game is what the game is. And it was an incredible game. And to come back the way that they did after losing to Laurier, the way they did a month before, incredible. And they had the right hand. They had Nick Domofsky play that game and he did a great job playing quarterback for them. And sometimes this is what Jim McDougal taught me all those years ago. We'd lost in the Quad A championship 8-7 on a Rouge back in the day. Sometimes boys, you're just a dollar short. And that's not because you didn't work hard. Sometimes you just come up a dollar short.
Well, we're here for the full dollar on this episode because this has been an absolute pleasure. Tom, let me give you last words before we wrap this thing up.
No, I just can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on to the pod, Brett. But even before that, your commitment to covering Windsor Lancers football has been nothing but amazing. We talk about how important it is to properly cover the game, and you solo covering the entirety of these Windsor Lancer home games of the past couple of seasons has been absolutely outstanding. We're fans of you first and foremost here, so we love everything that you've been doing there. And I know you already talked about it. When you called that interception in Queens, I'm jumping up and down, losing my mind because of how excited you were. It was one of the best calls of the year, easily. So just wanted to say,
you're talking about Queens or Carlton?
Queens. I'm talking about Queens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
A good one. So I had a couple in that year where you just let it flow. Like that Queens one was absolutely huge. The one against the Giovanni Cunningham touchdown run. That was huge because I started off talking about, oh, it could be a fake punt. And then, oh, Giovanni Cunningham parks under it, gets through the first wave of defenders. Do they get him? No. Bounces out outside. Oh, he's got Wayne Man to beat. Giovanni Cunningham down the sideline. Cunningham, touchdown. Like, it's just, it just flows. And just like, for someone who loves football as much as I do, I played 7 years of football, 5 years in high school, 2 years in the CJFL. I watched a lot of football when I played in the CJFL because I was a second string linebacker. So I had the best seat in the house most days to watch fantastic basketball. And just from my experience, just covering the team and having the best view in the entire stadium, basically to sit at the 55, and just call these games. It's an absolute pleasure, and I love it. I love it, and I honestly, it's some stuff that I circle on my calendar as soon as I get the schedule, and I say I don't care what's going on this day, I'm doing the football game. So it's a lot of fun, and doing that Carlton game, I think it took a couple years off of my life but it was a lot of fun too, because Corey Grant's team was absolutely great. They played until the very last second. And I thought that Tristan Forcier was going to hit that field goal at the end of the game to send it to overtime. And I thought, okay, what better than to go to overtime, but he's a little bit short. Wavy Mumbo catches the ball, kneels it down. And that was just money. Just absolute, like, just the icing on top of the cake. There, it was a lot of fun.
He is the voice of the Windsor Lancers football team and other sports programs around the Windsor Lancer program, Brett Hedges. Brett, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to finally meet. And again, just like Tom said, such a fan of the work that you're doing, part of what makes Windsor football a great program in all aspects. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It's a lot of fun to talk football. I just did the OUA track and field championships from Windsor this past weekend. So it was, and to me, I made this comparison. Sorry, I know we're up against it, but track and field to me is a lot like football, where you got people that are really good at certain things. And when you need them to do that, you lean on them to do that. And football is the same way. When you need your long snapper and your holder and your kicker to sync up on something, it's like a relay. It's like a relay passing off the baton in a relay. And sometimes you need your distance runners, like your DBs, to play the long game and say, okay, you know what? I might give up a couple passes here, but you know what? At the end of the game, I'm going to sprint up. I'm going to cut off that road and I'm going to pick it off and we're going to win the game. And so it's a lot of fun. So I made a lot of football comparisons this past weekend doing an OUA track and field, but football is my main love. That's for sure. With track being a close second.
Well, it comes out in droves when you're on the broadcast. Brett, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, guys. Thanks again, and keep up the hard work. We all appreciate what you do.
Much appreciated. That's a wrap on episode 9 of the Exit Meeting series. Coming up next, we have another stellar broadcaster join us to talk about his own team. We're talking the Laurier Goldenhawks, so you can figure out who we have on the broadcast. So we'll talk to you later on this week, right here at the 55.